This Sunday, as I told you in the beginning, is the anniversary, I think it's over 50, I can't remember exactly, but it's the anniversary of the Supreme Court decision, which is commonly referred to as Roe versus Wade, which basically legalized abortion on demand in the entire United States. Now, before I go too far, I'd like to divide my comments to you into two parts. The first part, I want to talk straight to any women or men who have taken part in any abortion. And notice I said women or men. And that is because I've not only talked to many women who experience the psychological and sometimes physiological pain of the after abortion, but also to men who were took part or facilitated women receiving abortions. And by the way, my voice may sound a little raspy, and the reason is I've been teaching for the last hour and a half to teenagers, and you have to use a very loud tone of voice, and my voice just isn't used to that. So first I want to talk directly to those women or men. And then secondly, just to talk to you about the logic, or shall I say the illogic, of what we're often accused of. And that is, the accusation is, why are you all trying to impose your religious views on us? And of course, what I'd like to talk to you about is the fact that these are not religious views by themselves. They're based on logic and reason. But first, allow me to just say a word directly to any of you. And please understand, the reason I say any of you, I don't know anybody in here personally that may have had an abortion or cooperated in one. But the statistics are pretty clear. And that is that probably about one in every three or four persons in the United States have participated in an abortion in some way. And that means that in this congregation, there probably are a good number that have gone through that. The very first thing I want to tell you, specifically any of you who are have experienced that, is that to a large degree, you yourselves are victims of the abortion industry. You yourselves are victims of the abortion industry. Now, why do I say that? Because when a person is vulnerable, an unintended pregnancy occurs. The person is in a desperate state. And at that moment, when they're in the most desperate state, if somebody comes in with an argument that is persuasive, most people will grab onto any kind of persuasive argument that gets them out easily out of the pain, out of having to go through the consequences of having had sex or in an unwanted pregnancy in any way, shape, or form. The greatest temptation is always the temptation to go the easy route. And for all of us who are in a particularly critical circumstance, it's not hard to convince another person or to convince yourself that it's okay. That's why my experience is that most of the women whom I have spoken with who have had abortions, when I get to speak to them are when they've sort of woken up. When they wake up and they look back and they kind of think to themselves, what did I do? And why did I do it? And the immediate thing that comes into my mind is Jesus on the cross and what he said. And what I say to women or men in that situation is, I want you to think of what Jesus on the cross, what he said. He didn't say, Father, look at what these idiots have done to me, and then condemn everybody. Listen to what he said. He said, not only, Father, forgive them. That's correct. But why? Forgive them why? Because they don't know what they're doing. They don't know what they're doing. And in my experience, the majority of people that have cooperated in an abortion in any way, they were in a particular moment of desperation, of wanting to get out of a particular problem, and they didn't really think it through. And a lot of times, people live with that pain for the rest of their lives. I want you to understand that if you're there, I want you to understand that in no way does the Catholic Church condemn you. You are a sinner just like we are. And that forgiveness is always there. And you always have a home with in your Father's house. And you are always welcome. And if you need to experience a deep reconciliation, that's what confession is all about. You know, in confession, what happens is, confession is not about getting your sins right. Confession, or the sacrament of reconciliation, is about being able to open yourself to a deep experience of forgiveness. And the deeper the pain, the deeper the experience of forgiveness needs to be. I often tell people, because people sometimes say to me, well, why do I need to go to confession? Since, you know, I can go directly to God. And the answer is because the sacrament of reconciliation, also called confession, is an intense experience of forgiveness in much more intense way than just talking to God on your own. Let me give you an example. I often like to use this example. Imagine that you and your wife, in this case I'm going to talk a guy, you and your wife, or you and your husband, had a kind of a minor fight the night before. And neither of you talked to each other. And before you go to work, as you're walking out the door, you turn to your husband and your wife, and you go, honey, I'm really sorry about last night. We really should not have let things go that far. I'm really sorry. At that moment, most of the time, your husband or your wife would say, that's okay, sweetie. That's okay. We both made mistakes. And then you give him a kiss and off to work. Now, I want you to imagine another scenario. You found out that your wife or your husband has been having an affair and has cheated on you, and you found out the night before, and a huge fight broke out as soon as the affair became known. You didn't talk to each other this overnight. And then on your way out to work, you turn to your husband or your wife and you go, "You know, honey, about that affair, I'm sorry." Okay? Okay. Do you expect her to go, "Oh, that's okay, sweetie"? What's wrong? You apologized, didn't you? What's wrong is that instinctively we know that a light rupture of the relationship in a small fight can make do with a quick apology and a quick reconciliation. But when you do something that is significantly hurts or something significantly wrong, then the reconciliation has to match. You can't just say, "Oops, sorry." The reconciliation has to be as intense as the depth of the pain that it caused. That's why the church says, come to reconciliation. Come not so that you can feel judged, but that so that you can experience a reconciliation that goes to the heart of the pain. It would be like, you know, if somebody stabs you, if you get a cut on your hand, you can put a little Band-Aid. But if somebody stabs you, you can't put a Band-Aid on it. It requires much more in-depth healing. And the people who have experienced abortion, even though you were a victim of it, it haunts you. And that haunting can be brought to light and healed through the sacrament, the depth experience of the sacrament of reconciliation. And so that's what I wanted to say at the beginning to any of you who have experienced that. And if you don't want to come during normal time of confession, because this may be a little more intense, call me and we'll make an appointment and we'll sit in my office and we'll talk about it as long as you need to. Okay? Now, the second part of what I want to say is I call it the abortion industry, because there is a whole system of thought that now has invested in making sure that abortion on demand is kept at all cost. And the problem is, of course, the typical thing is, why are you trying to impose your religious views on me? And what I'd like to help us to understand is that being pro-life is not necessarily a religious point of view. It is actually a point of view that is based on reason, and it's based on deduction. Let me start by giving you a quote from the great Russian writer whose name was Dostoevsky. Dostoevsky said something that I remember regularly. Dostoevsky said one time, it was the 19th century, he said, "If there is no God, then all things are permissible." Now think about it. If there is no God, then all things are permissible. Now why? Because the problem is that when you're judging whether something is right or wrong, you have to begin by saying, is there anything that is absolutely wrong at all times for all people? Is there something that somebody outside of ourselves has said, no, you shall not do this. Let me give you an example, because this is typical when you hear people say, well, your values are your values, and my values are my values. Don't impose your values on me. You have yours, and I have mine. I'll do what I want, you do what you want. That is the kind of argument that has been used throughout history to commit the most terrible atrocities that humanity has ever thought of. The most egregious one, the most intense one, happened in just the last century in the Second World War. This is one of the ones that is just so amazing. When the Germans lost the war, the United States and the Allies went searching for all the top brass of the Nazi regime, all of Hitler's generals and administrators. And when they caught them, as many as they could catch, they put them on trial. And when they put them on trial, the defense that the Nazis took was this. They said, look, in order for us to have committed a crime, we had to have done something against the law. Right? A crime is not a crime if it's not against the law. So, in Germany, Hitler was elected democratically, and the German people mostly supported him. In Germany, laws were passed to where anti-Semitism, anti-Judaism, was legal, and the government made a legal decision to kill as many Jews as possible. Why? Because, you see, the government believed that since there was no God, the official point of the Nazis was there was no God, they wanted to improve humanity as best as they could. Now, remember, this is the desire. Let us use the best scientific methods we have to improve humanity. That's what's called the science of eugenics. Eugenics became very popular in the early part of the 20th century and into the 1920s, 30s, and 40s. And what eugenics is very logical. Think of it this way. When you have animals, and if in your mind there is no God, we are animals. We have the same, we have arms and legs and eyes and feet. We eat, we poop, we do everything animals do. So we are just more advanced animals. So if you have, say, a herd of sheep, and you want to improve the herd of sheep, what do? You make sure that only the best of the herd mate so that the characteristics of the best sheep become the dominant characteristic of the entire herd. And what you do is, you may even want to sterilize the sheep that are not quite as good, because if you sterilize them, then they won't reproduce and they won't hand on the bad qualities that are in that herd. You may even, if you get hungry or something like that, if you need to slaughter one of the sheep to eat, you don't slaughter your best sheep that are going to reproduce. What you do is you slaughter the lesser ones because you can do without them. Now, that's the reasoning, and it makes perfect sense when you're dealing with animals. And we do that all the time. Now, remember, if there is no God, then anything is permissible. So, the Nazis thought, now remember, what was their desire? Their desire was to make the best humanity that they could. And they were going to use the same methods that are used in science because of evolution. In evolution, we know it's the survival of the fittest. And so what you do is, you want to take the best of humanity and make sure that they reproduce, and then make sure that the people in humanity that are not so good don't reproduce. And that way you improve all of humanity. It may surprise you to know that the science of eugenics began most strongly right here in the United States in the 1920s and in the 1930s. That's where eugenics began. And many people don't know this, but a woman by the name of Margaret Sanger was a person who began promoting abortion. Why? So we could get rid of the lesser people that she thought were not contributing to what she called racial hygiene. And that is making sure that we only had the best specimens of humanity in order for us to grow as a human race. That was copied by the Nazis. And what the Nazis basically said is, we think that Jews and gypsies and people who are not white Aryans, Germans, are not as good as everybody else. So what we're going to do is we're going to start with the Jews. Well, actually, they didn't start with the Jews. What they did is they started with the sick and the mentally retarded, the mentally challenged. They started with people who were deformed and things like that. And they started calling them, you know what they called them? Useless eaters. And slowly, abortion became legal, and all of a sudden, they were doing this. They were killing people. Why? Because they wanted to make human race better. Now, going back to their trial, because I don't want to get too far into that. The Nazis, when they were caught, they said, well, wait a minute. We did what was legal. A crime is to disobey a law. We didn't disobey a law. So we did what was legal. You all in the United States and in England, you can keep your Jews. We didn't want ours. And so since there is no right and wrong, we're pro-choice. Shall we say, we're all pro-choice. You guys keep your Jews over there and we'll get rid of ours. Because it's an individual cultural decision. Since there's no right or wrong, don't impose your values, your religious values on us. We don't believe in God. And therefore, if we decide that Jews or sick people are inferior, what makes you so hot that you impose your values on us Germans? That was their defense. Sound familiar? Sound familiar with you're imposing your religious views on us? And so the lawyers, by the way, who were prosecuting the Nazi and the officials, they had to invent something that they didn't know anything about. They borrowed from the religious tradition of something called natural law, and they changed the name of natural law. And you know what they changed the name of the natural law that says that no, that human life is sacred? You know what they changed the name to? Crimes against humanity. That had never been heard of before. They invented it for the Nuremberg trials of the Nazis. Because why? Because at your gut level, you know that the killing of another human being is wrong. It's not about imposing your religious values on another person. You know that there's something very wrong when another person says, it's my choice to kill a human being. And that's the problem. They are human beings. Human beings in the womb are human. They're not ducks. They're not lambs. They're human. There's no time. And some people say, well, they're not people yet. Well, excuse me. But can you tell me at what time do they actually become a people? Tell me. Let's catch one. Let's catch one becoming a people. And that's ridiculous. And so the arguments that we have made ourselves swallow are arguments that are just not valid. And they're not about imposing religion on another person. It's about the fact that there is a common humanity and that there are times that there are values in which human beings feel in their gut that you know it's wrong. It's not about you have your values and I have my values. That was the argument that was taken by the Nazis. And so I want you to just remember that what we have done in our country is try to blindfold ourselves, to make believe that it's okay. And that's why, especially for those of you who have experienced an abortion or have cooperated in one, you were bamboozled. You were bamboozled, and you're as much a victim. Most of you are as much victims as any of the children who were killed. And so as we continue to fight for all human life, from conception to natural death, just continue to pray, especially for the soul of our country. Then we may take the blinders off and start understanding that all life is sacred, that we all need to open our hearts to life.